Fly ball to the corner. It goes into deep right field. Ohtani, he did it!
Swinging a high fly ball to right. It is out of here! Yastrzemski does it again, and the Giants lead 4-0.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAM, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Time for that Wednesday baseball talk here on Drive Time Sports, and there's so many storylines to get into. Last night, I think it was just jaw-dropping seeing Bryce Harper back in a uniform playing for the Phillies. He goes hitless against the Dodgers, but who cares? The idea that this guy is back 160 days after Tommy John surgery. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Major League Baseball going to Mexico, all that and more. Joining us right now, we have Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher. Bill, as always, a pleasure to get you on.
Yeah, happy Wednesday to you and your listeners. Month of April is over. Now we get into the month of May before we get into the June month of baseball and seeing who's really, you know, contending. And we got a lot of surprises, and see if some of these teams that are playing not so well, if they can get back on the horse and ride it to get better pastures, because you're talking about a lot of quality teams in last place.
No question. No question. The New York Yankees being one of them with a winning record in last place. We'll talk about that in a moment, Bill. I want to get your thoughts on what went down in Mexico. Anytime, if it's Major League Baseball, if it's the NBA, if it's the NFL, if it's the NHL, you go into these test markets, and playing overseas definitely has its pros and its cons. And I think we saw that on display as the Padres got to go over to Mexico against the Giants for a two-game set. A boatload of runs scored. The Padres played 22. They outscored the Giants 22-15 in two games. Good for baseball to play out of the country? Yes, but as you told me off air, not so much in that particular stadium because the ball was just flying off of the bat.
It sure was. I spoke to several people from the Giants and the media that went there, and international baseball's great. There's no doubt about it. Mexico City was exciting. It was riveting to fans that come finally see Major League Baseball. It's never been there before. First time Major League Baseball has gone into Mexico City and played. But the ballpark was definitely not ready. They should have maybe had an exhibition game before they played to see how lively the ball was. The humidor wasn't even used the first game. 11 home runs were hit. Fly balls that were literally a pop-up carried out. 16-11 for the first game. And then the second game, they changed it a little bit. They changed the baseballs. And a different type of game, Hugh Darvish against Alex Cobb. And it was a pretty good game. It was more of a baseball game. But I think both pitchers changed the way their approach was. They pitched more inside. The breaking ball was a third pitch of what they wanted to do because it was mostly crossing fastballs and changeups because of the altitude. The spins weren't crisp. The spins were more spinning, and it didn't have that nice break at the end. And it was a tough game for the pitchers. Hitters, of course, were loving it. They were stacking up their stats. But you know what? When you think about it, it was great for fan base. It's great for Major League Baseball to show some clarity and use in Mexico City as an opportunity. But I really believe they dropped the ball in how the game was played, where the game was played. And the last thing, the turf was so worn out, bouncing. Balls were just bouncing like a super ball, as well as ground balls going hit through the infield, balls that couldn't even be caught because it was so fast of a track. Good for the game of baseball, but bad for the way baseball was played.
You know, they've done so many things over the last couple of years with the Field of Dream game, which I actually thought was pretty interesting, Bill. Now the game's in Mexico. I mean, when you look at it, what's next for baseball? Do you think this becomes a regular thing where over the next 10 years there's going to be a continuance of games played in Mexico?
They've already looked at it, and next year they're going to do the Houston Astros against the Colorado Rockies. But there's no doubt about it. Both those teams are going to watch both these games and get a viewpoint of how we're going to attack this game. I just think Mexico City could have done a little bit better, put a new turf on the ground for them. Maybe somehow the humidor has to come into effect as it does in Colorado. But the fan base was there. It was pretty cool with all the mariachi bands. They sang Take Me Out to the Ballpark in Spanish. Some really cool, fun things for the fans.
It's going to be nothing out of the norm for the Rockies, right, playing in a stadium like that?
Yeah, and they said it's 2,000 feet higher in elevation, and I interviewed Alex Cobb yesterday. He had a hard time breathing. They brought water out to him, and you know, to breathe after a guy hits a double, you could see him panting at second base. You know, baseball players aren't used to that. I remember when the 49ers played in Mexico City, they flew to Colorado Springs, which was a higher elevation, just to train because it does wipe you out. And I said the second game, it seemed like both teams tired out, you know, in the 6th, 7th, and 8th inning, and I think that's all from the oxygen and what your intake is.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball. Bill, we have to talk about Bryce Harper. As I mentioned last night, returns to the lineup for the Phillies. He's going to be the designated hitter 160 days after Tommy John surgery. And I know you and I have had this conversation before. At one point in time, Tommy John, it was a death sentence for a baseball career. And now we're seeing where these scouts, they actually prefer that an 18, 19-year-old kid has Tommy John because the elbow's been constructed even better than it is when naturally. And now we see a guy come back. He missed 30 games. That's all Bryce Harper has missed after Tommy John surgery. This is remarkable, but in the same sense, questionable.
I agree with you. I mean, it's not fully healed. There's no doubt about it. I'm sure he's swinging the bat. He's not playing the field. He's not throwing. He's been practicing playing first base, a new position that he wants to learn. But I just think, you know, if he injures it again, what happens? He's down for another year. So many hands, ifs, ors, but it seems like the doctors have cleared him. He wants to play. He wants to help this Philly team. He sees the advancement of this team, how many good players there are now, and what can come into the Philly lineup. And I just think he's missing baseball. He just doesn't want to be on the IL.
How has this surgery, or I guess the recovery even from the surgery, evolved, Bill, over the, you know, the 25 years that you've paid attention to this and where it was? Well, yeah, we'll say 20 years ago. Let's go back to 2000. Where is this surgery and this operation and the recovery, how has it enhanced the most? What have you noticed?
Well, I think when it first started, you know, it was always the rotator cuff. You know, the pitcher's arm rotator cuff always was the damage. And then now the elbow from trying to throw so hard and throwing hard breaking balls and things of that magnitude, it just wears out the elbow. And same thing with the swings, how vicious these swings are and how hard they swing. And they used to take a tendon out of the leg and replace it in the elbow of the arm. That has gauged a lot more. It's gone to really an intense type of surgery. But it takes so long for that arm to recover, as well as the movement of the arm and the elbow. And you have to get fingertip control. You have to get the feel of all your fingers and your hands. The recovery time of Bryce Harper just amazes me. It seems like he's recovered already. But again, I look at it as, okay, you're pushing yourself now. You could re-injure it. We have heard so many times where pitchers have tried to come back and they have to go back in for a second Tommy John surgery because you rupture that tendon. Something we need to look at, but something, boy, the Phillies are sure putting a lot on him to come back and be that top superstar that he was yesterday. He swung and missed a lot of pitches. And some of the things, he hasn't really gone to much of a rehab to see top-line pitchers, and he's jumping right into the well against Major League pitchers that really are pretty strong right now. They've gone through the month of May. Most of these pitchers are going 80, 90 pitchers or more in the starting rotation. So their top stuff is there. So he's going to have to either crack down and really, really try to make contact, or he's just going to go right back at it, swinging for the fences and see what comes out of it. But we're definitely going to keep an eye on him and see if there's any type of soreness, weakness in that elbow, and see if this is going to gauge any more on what he's going to produce for the Phillies.
If we transition, we'll talk about pitchers in general. It is a big week for the New York Mets, another team that's hanging around. You know, this is a team that's in second place right now. They've had their fair share of issues. Max Scherzer now fresh off a suspension. He's going to make his return against Detroit, but also tomorrow, Justin Verlander is going to make his Mets debut. I guess it's really fitting, right, Bill, that both Scherzer and Verlander can make their first two starts together against Detroit. That's fitting.
That sure is, and boy, oh boy, it's going to be great to see them in that rotation every fifth day, something that I think a lot of New York fans were waiting to see ever since Verlander signed with them from Houston. And the Mets have been, you know, they've been keeping a lot, staying alive, but these are your two horses that you put a lot of money into to make sure that you get out there every fifth day and see what they can do. Now, of course, Detroit is struggling, so they're probably just going to go out, try to get some quality pitches, take a look at how they're throwing, the spin rates and velocity, and gauge off of that. But this is a good for Major League Baseball, and definitely for the Met fans.
Yeah, when you look at Verlander, and well, we start with Scherzer, because we've seen the sample size this year and the pace of the game, the idea that maybe the pace of the game doesn't necessarily benefit pitchers who are hovering around 40 years old. I know that was a topic of conversation, and the Mets put a lot of money into two aging pitchers, two capable but aging pitchers. Does the pace of play hurt older pitchers, Bill? Have you noticed that?
You know, they keep saying it. I really haven't seen much of it because, you know, I think as the game goes on, the fifth, sixth, seventh innings, as they're pushing themselves in the middle part of the game, I think that's where it takes the energy away from the pitcher because he's trying to get a little more air between pitches, deep breaths, trying to concentrate a little bit more, and it's a fast-paced game. It's fast-paced. I spoke to Bob Melvin, and Bob Melvin said he wishes that it would just be 20 seconds for the windup as well as the stretch. So the pitcher kind of gets in that same formality of 20 seconds, instead of 15 and 20. And, you know, he's got a good point there because if you keep mindset of it, 15 seconds is pretty quick, plus you got to engage into the hitter at 8 seconds. So, you know what, veteran pitchers just have to establish what they want to do quicker. But at the same time, the pace of the game may tire them out.
Bill, let's jump over to the American League for a moment. You talked about some of these teams separating themselves, seeing who some of the contenders are. It may be a little too early to call the AL East the best division in baseball, although every team is over 500. We've talked about the Rays. At this point, it's not a surprise to see this team streaking, but the second place team in the AL East, we talked about this briefly last week, and I'm going to go back to it. The Baltimore Orioles are 20-9, and they keep finding ways to win games.
I think it's fabulous. I really do. And I think it's fabulous what the Pittsburgh Pirates are doing, too, in the National League. But Baltimore is a running team. They've established that. Get on base, we're going to go. And they've established some big numbers out of the running game. They're playing good baseball. And fundamental baseball is, I think, one of the biggest things you got to look at there because it's a young team, and they're trying to put some older players mix in there. But I love it. I love a new team like the Orioles competing in the AL East, and who's going to stop the Tampa Bay Rays? They are just fabulous at home. Everybody is playing well there. Their pitching staff's getting stronger. They're scoring runs, and they're hitting home runs. So when you look at the AL East and you see Tampa Bay and Baltimore 1-2, I think it's great for baseball.
Tampa Bay, Baltimore 1-2, Red Sox, Yankees 4-5. Isn't that something?
That amazes me. It really does. And Toronto's been playing 500. I'm waiting for them to start getting hot. They just have not had that much on the offensive side. But when you look at the AL East and then you look at the AL Central, totally two different divisions. The AL Central is just getting weaker by the year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, in a sense, I guess it's good for a team like Minnesota because they seem to be even keel. We've seen the Guardians get worse. The Tigers are a train wreck. The White Sox, who were a sexy pick over the last couple of years, they've gotten drastically worse. And the Royals have been the Royals, really, for the last five, six seasons. The Minnesota Twins have been the only team that they haven't necessarily improved, but they haven't gotten any worse.
I agree. And, you know, you look at the Cleveland Guardians, or the Guardians I thought were going to be one of the hottest teams, and they've cooled off. But you look at the Twins, and the Twins of Sonny Gray has just been pitching so great. I remember him pitching like this in the Oakland A's when he was here. But, boy, he has just been in popping good velocity on his fastball, good breaking ball, and he's a competitor. That's what I loved about Sonny Gray, a young kid. But he's had some arm issues, but this year it seems like he's got it all together, and he's got Cy Young stuff right now.
Yeah, we've talked about the Orioles. You mentioned the Pirates. I think this is a great place to end. I got to ask you, do you believe in the Pittsburgh Pirates? Do you believe in what they're selling at the moment?
I hope so. I hope it continues. You know, they've lost their last two games, but they're playing really well at home and a great mixture. And it's just, it's great to see that, but can this sustain it? That's going to be the big question. And, you know, month of May will tell you, but, you know, you look in that division, you look at the St. Louis Cardinals, 10-20, and I'm shaking my head when you're looking at the Pirates with 20 wins and the Cardinals with 10. We would have never predicted that at the beginning of the year. And, again, I'm going to repeat it. It's good for baseball. It's good for a new team to get life and to believe what they're building, and the Pittsburgh Pirates are definitely do that.
Yeah, when you look at the four lowest payrolls in baseball, this was before the extension to Brian Reynolds. Pittsburgh was 27, Tampa Bay 28, Baltimore 29, and Oakland 30th. Okay, so three out of the bottom four teams right now are legitimate, right? Two of them are division leaders. But Bill, right above Pittsburgh is Cincinnati. And I guess I can pick on the Reds here for a moment because, yes, it's good for baseball to see where the Pirates are. I don't know if it's good for baseball to see a team with a $73 million payroll have success. And I say that because right above them, the Cincinnati Reds, who were just a few years removed from having all three starting National League outfielders. Remember this? They also had the Cy Young Award winner in Trevor Bauer, and they have absolutely nothing to show for it. And so I'm kind of stuck. Is this good for baseball? Is it not? It's fun, but I also have a hard time respecting a team that absolutely refused to pay money. That's Cincinnati, that's Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Go back to Marge Schott days. You know, she didn't want to spend any money back in Red days when she owned the club. And, you know, you start thinking about, you know, these teams that have low salaries. And then you start thinking, well, are other general managers thinking the same way? Can we save money and not give out these big payrolls? When you look at the Yankees and you look at the Cardinals and how much money they've devastated in putting so much into so many different players, and it isn't working. So, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But at the same time, you know what? I love it when teams like that come in and battle because you think, oh, they're the Pittsburgh Pirates. We'll beat them in a 2 out of 3 series. And sure enough, you're getting swept by them. So let it continue through the month of May, and let's see if these teams can sustain what they built in the month of April. And we'll just see how this rides out. But I am happy to see some of these teams have 20 wins already, and they weren't even expected to be in the top two.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's not the players' fault, right? These guys are fighting for a position. They're fighting for a job.
Hey, every time a baseball's in your hand, you're fighting for everything, and you're competing at the highest level. And when you get 9 players to work like the Pirates doing or the Orioles, you start believing it. And once you start believing it, you sustain that winning atmosphere, a lot of things can happen. It's just how long you can do it and how long some of these older players can play at the top of the game like they're doing. But, hey, it's baseball. We love talking about it. It's 2023, and you never know what magic's going to bring in this season.
No, I agree. I agree. Bill Lasky, taking out the time to join us. Bill, before I let you go, of course, let us know where we can find more of your excellent work, which is archived. You can listen to it on demand.
Yeah, and KNBR, you can stream it, and another couple good shows coming this weekend. Last week, and you can podcast and have a chance to sit down with Trevor Hoffman from the San Diego Padres. And really, really was a good interview. We talked about the palm ball and some of the things that he did coming up. And it's a great podcast. You can listen to it on all KNBR podcasts and look up for Extra Innings with Bill Lasky and take a look at some of the other interviews I've had. I've had a good crop of them so far.
Bill, love the time. Thank you so much for making time for us. Can't wait to do it again next week.
Always my pleasure, my friend.
Always great to get Bill Lasky here on Drive Time Sports. Always up for some Major League Baseball talk. We're going to pause one more time. More coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.